Paul and I recently started watching somewhat older science fiction television show that was on for 1 year. Some of you may have seen it and know it well. It's called Firefly, which is a mixture of genres of space, science fiction, Western, cowboy, and comedy. Kind of like all is perfect, right? Made by Joss Whedon, whom I've quoted here before. And unfortunately canceled after one season, so in his angst he created a film version called Serenity, which shortly followed afterward. But in one of the early episodes, the main character named Mal, who's like just sort of this guy who does odd jobs in space, you know, sort of living outside of the law, he goes to do this job for sort of like a mob boss who has this vague Eastern European accent named Nishka. And Nishka explains that if you do everything right, I don't want to do this. I'll slip into like I was about to slip into like a Dracula accent, but that's not right. I'll just speak in plain English. You know, if you do everything right, all will be well and you'll get your money. But if you fail, I'll kill you. Like, your option is to do the heist and get it right. And he says, I have a reputation. My reputation is not from gossip. It's from fact. And so to prove his reputation, and he says, Mal, your reputation is based on gossip. Mine is based on fact. And to prove his reputation of, if you fail, I will kill you, he opens these doors. And there's a guy, a corpse hanging from his feet, a young man who he killed, basically saying, this guy failed his job. And he says, it was my nephew. I'm getting an earful at the dinner table from my wife because it's her sister's son. Well, you know, maybe, you know, what about you? There might be things in your life that you've had a similar experience where it was like you either do it right, or if you don't, it's, you know, off with your head. There will be blood. Maybe not necessarily to that degree, but it felt that way, didn't it? You know, just sort of like this is your one shot at that test. When I was in college at first, I had two majors. At first, I was a journalism major, and then I just sort of switched to general communications because, and I did a journalism minor instead, because I took a class called reporting, Journalism 300, and the professor was a sort of retired, quasi-retired newspaper reporter, and he was a stickler about two things. AP, Associated Press style, is a style manual that you use with the rules. You had to get it absolutely right, and you may not misspell anyone's name. You had to do actual reporting for this class, like work a beat. And so you interview people. If you misspell this person's name, automatic fail, no matter how good the article was. And his reasoning was because often that's the only time someone's name is in the press, and if you misspell it, that's a huge disappointment. And it was the lowest grade that I got in college, you know, because I couldn't get these down, and I just felt like there was no mercy in this class. It was the worst class I'd ever taken, so much so I switched majors. Well, the author of the Hebrews speaks similarly about, he talks about two mountains in this passage. He speaks similarly about Mount Sinai versus Mount Zion. And there are two important, there are many themes to Hebrews. So don't hear me saying these are the only two themes, but there are two important themes that come up throughout Hebrews. One is speaking, and the other is about blood. And both of those things come up here. And the blood is in reference to sacrificial systems. Just as the young man was hanging in Nishka's closet, you know, he was a sacrifice. The blood was spilled because things didn't go right. And Nishka's rage had to be mounted upon this young man. Similarly, Hebrews often talks about speaking, the voice, the cry, and the blood, the atoning sacrifice, the sacrificial system. And when we hear about Mount Sinai, wasn't that great when Brandon was reading it? Did you hear the thunder? I mean, it was perfect. I couldn't have planned it any better because that's the image of Mount Sinai. You know, thunder, the cloud. It's gloomy, you know, scary. It demands absolute perfection, the covenant of Sinai. When Moses gave the law, when he came down from, when the thunder was clapping, and he came down from the mountain, gave the law, do you remember what he did? There was some blood there from a bull, and he took probably a branch or something with leaves and dipped it in the blood, because when he gave them the law, the people of Israel, like Moses, like me standing before you, if you were the people of Israel, they said, all this we will do. We will maintain this law. And so he puts the branch in the blood and sprinkled it on the people to seal the covenant and blood, basically saying, if you fail, it'll be just like this for you. You'll be like the young man hanging from his feet in the closet. It demands absolute perfection. And Hebrews also, in this passage, mentions the blood of Abel to explain these ideas, to provide a similar contrast about Sinai versus Zion. Abel is being a lot like Sinai. Remember in Genesis chapter 4, after Cain kills his brother Abel, the voice of Abel's blood cried out from the ground for what? It cried out for vengeance, for retribution that his brother Cain actually deserved for killing him. However, contrast that brother's story with another brother's story from the Old Testament, one that is much more hopeful. The story of Joseph, Jacob's son, and his 12 brothers. Do you remember that story of Joseph and his rainbow coat and his brothers who wanted a rainbow coat too? You know, and he dreamed a lot. And one of the dreams, he said, my brothers will bow down to me as if I'm a king over you. And so in retribution, they pretend that he's killed and sell him off to slavery for 20 pieces of silver as if he were dead to them. And he goes off into Egypt, where he eventually works through the system after being in prison and becomes a prince of Egypt under Pharaoh, who is a sort of bureaucratic person in the nation of Egypt. And there's a famine, and his brothers have to come into Egypt to get some food. And who do they have to go talk to? They have to go talk to Joseph, but they don't recognize that it's their own brother. And in this instant, just as Abel's blood cried from the ground for vengeance and retribution, Joseph, in his power, sitting there on that middle manager's throne as a prince of Egypt, could have cut off their heads, you know, just like Nishka. He had the power in that seat. But what did he do finally at the end of the day? He forgives them. He hugs them. He takes them in as a member of his household. He didn't give them the violence that they deserved, but he gave them the mercy that they did not deserve. And this unexpected mercy in this story is sort of an image or a foreshadowing of the hopeful things to come in Jesus Christ. The author of Hebrews contrasts Abel's blood with the blood of Christ, of Jesus. The blood of Christ, we hear, speaks a better word. A better word than the blood of Abel. This is the word of undeserved mercy and not the word of retribution. The blood of Christ and the hope that it provided was represented by Mount Zion in this metaphor here that we have in chapter 12, contrasting Mount Sinai with the thunder and the doom with Mount Zion at the place of mercy and hope. Well, what about now? You know, in 2016, Hebrews is a great book to read all the time because there's always stuff going on in the world. But I feel like, don't you feel like right now in 2016, things are crazy if you read the news? I mean, I think things are, it's all the stuff. It's crazy if you read it on the internet. Don't go on Facebook. You read the newspaper, presidential election, things happening in the Middle East, people shooting each other all the time. I mean, especially during a time like this, Hebrews is really helpful to read because the author of the Hebrews is writing to an audience that's been through persecution, they're suffering. They're experiencing things a lot like Christians in the Middle East are experiencing now. But, you know, I mean, maybe it's not as drastic for you. It could just be the sort of everyday drudgery of life. We live in a sort of litigious and coercive society that demands vengeance all the time. You know, just consider the exhibits of Exhibit A, B, and C of internet trolls, if you know what I'm talking about, the IRS, and ISIS. You know, they all start with I. You know, to varying degrees. And even if you're not experiencing ISIS yourself, I'm sure it provides some anxiety for you either way. But these are the kinds of things that we have to deal with. But maybe it's more simpler for you. Maybe it's just illness. Maybe a terrible relationship that you're in, or depression, anxiety. I was reading recently that the search on Google for the word anxiety has gone up tremendously in the year 2016 versus previous years. It goes up each year. It's like a, you know, exponential rate in 2016 anxiety. So you're probably experiencing it. And as I said, just the sort of getting by, you know, the sort of the constant disappointment of everyday life. There's perhaps blood spilled on the ground, and its voice seems to be crying out to condemn you. Where is the hope? Where's the release? Where's the mercy? There's a controversial pastor in Colorado named Nadia Bultz-Weber, who you might have heard of. She's a Lutheran pastor, and she likes to tell the story about a wedding that she was supposed to do. And part of the story, she explains that when people become new members of her church, she always remembers to tell them that eventually we will disappoint you as a church. It's just a matter of time. You know, you might come in feeling, and I can say that to you, you know, the Advent will disappoint you. But she says this, we'll eventually disappoint you. Well, she was supposed to do this wedding, this couple, and she mixed up her dates. And at the same time, she was also supposed to be speaking in Australia, and they've already paid thousands of dollars for her to come do the speaking engagement that she couldn't get out of. She was trying so hard to get out of the speaking engagement down in Australia so she could do this wedding, and felt terrible about it. To do this wedding for these two people that she loved, she didn't want to disappoint them. And she had a text message conversation one night with the bride, and the bride said, this is it, isn't it? And she said, what are you talking about? Text back. And she said, the time when you'll disappoint me. And Nadia says, you know, dang it, it is, you know, confessing it. And the next morning, she wakes up to an email that said, Dear Pastor Nadia, we release you. We'll have another pastor do the wedding. Go to Australia and do the speaking engagement. I love that story, the release, the mercy. Even though, you know, in the eyes of the Nishkas of the world, and maybe you've been in a similar situation where you were in a pickle, we feel like we don't deserve that kind of mercy. And yet they were giving it to her, and it's so hard to receive that grace. But it is an image of the grace of God that we have in Jesus Christ through his spilled blood that the author of Hebrews talks to us so much about throughout this book. And Hebrews gives us a sort of eternal reassurance of this kind, like with Nadia, but to a greater degree. If anxiety is going up exponentially, the reassurance of the grace of God is going up exponentially too, because it's eternal. You know, if I think about myself as a father, I'm absolutely unpredictable. You know, I'll say one thing to my children in terms of like consequences on the one hand, and over here it'll be, you know, it'll be totally different. It depends on the mood I'm in, or what I ate for breakfast, or how well I slept last night. You know, I try to be benevolent, but I fail all the time. You know, I'm shaky, as it were, depending on these different variables. But we have a Father. We have a Father with a capital F whose kingdom is unshakable. You know, it doesn't matter what mood God the Father is in, what breakfast he ate, or how well he slept. We know that we have an eternal hope. We have reassurance in what will happen in relation to him, because of the mediation of Jesus Christ. and it's unshakable, as the author of Hebrews says. This kingdom will not move from that message. The Son of God, who on the foothills of Mount Zion was hanging on a cross to be killed, and his blood was being shed, and his brothers exchanged him for 20 pieces of silver too. And while that was happening, he said, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. And that is the message for us. We were one of them out there to have him crucified. Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. And the author of the Hebrews wanted us to know that very message, no matter what is happening in the world, no matter what's happening out there in the world, on the internet, in the Middle East, no matter what's happening in the drudgery of your daily life, that is the message for you, for us. We have an unshakable reassurance in this message, that we will not be hunted down by a Nishka-like God that will, you know, due to even our smallest failures, string us up. But instead, we have a God who desires mercy because of the intervention of Jesus Christ. Thanks be to God for that. Amen.